The second verse of the Genesis creation narrative reads, quote, "And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." The rest of the chapter goes on to describe how after the sky and land is formed on the first 3 days of creation, they are filled on days 4 to 6 by luminaries, birds, fish, animals, and man, respectively. The Bible goes on to warn that a rebellion against God would lead to the return of darkness and chaos, quote, as if the earth had been uncreated. But who is this God that was issuing warnings against the rebellion, and when did his worship begin? In antiquity, southeastern Canaan, or the southern part of modern Israel, was a very important center for copper smelting. Although some biblical writings suggest a southern Canaanite origin for the god Yahweh, no details are provided concerning his worship prior to him becoming the God of Israel. That said, the geographic territory of Judea, or southern Canaan, was occupied by a tribe of shepherds and metalsmiths called Kenites in the Bible, who are thought to be descended from the biblical Cain. While the Old Testament describes Yahweh separate and distinct from the gods of Canaan, scholars identify the god Yahweh as originally being a god of the Kenites, a tribe of Edomites, and was later identified by the Israelites with the god of Abraham. The Israelite cult of Yahweh was associated with copper and with the bronze serpent, a typical symbol of metallurgy, as the smelting of copper is considered in the Old Testament as the specific sign of Yahweh. Anthropologically speaking, a parallel exists between Yahweh and the god of metallurgy worshipped in Egypt, Mesopotamia, and Elam. And we know from the archaeological record that Yahweh was in fact worshipped as Dionysus in the later classical era. And therefore, becoming publicly worshipped in Israel, Yahweh was associated with the Guild of Metallurgists of Edom, the territory just below Judea in the land of Canaan. At the time of Exodus, at least some of the Kenites are depicted as inhabiting the vicinity of Mount Sinai. Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, was a Kenite, and Moses is described as living with his clan for 40 years, where he married Jethro's daughter, Zipporah, who was also an Edomite. The region of southern Canaan on the southern border of Judea was known as Edom, where we get the term Edomites. The Hebrew word Edom means red, and the Hebrew Bible relates it to the name of its founder, Esau, the elder son of the Hebrew patriarch Isaac, because he was born, quote, red all over, which has been interpreted by many to imply that he was a ginger. According to the Bible, the capital of Edom was called Sela, but in the writings of Josephus, it is called Petra, as it is known today, the Greek word corresponding to the Hebrew Sela, and at one time Petra was also known as Mecca. That said, there's considerable evidence to show that the original Kaaba from the Islamic faith was located in Petra, and that all of the mosques from all over the world in the first 100 years of Islam pointed to this city in southern Jordan. While some Islamic scholars will argue that it was Jerusalem, modern mapping technology has indicated the direction was actually Petra, about 150 miles south of Jerusalem. So, if Petra was the holy city of Islam, the place where the first Kaaba was located, then the Prophet Muhammad would have been born and raised in Petra, and then later traveled to Medina in Saudi Arabia. Descriptions of Muhammad's original city, detailed in the Quran, does not match the Mecca of today, nor is this location supported by archaeology. Where the Prophet was located was considered to be, according to the Quran, as the mother of all cities, a major trading city, which does not historically fit with modern Mecca, but does fit perfectly for Petra, which grew wealthy in antiquity from its location along a major trade route. That said, the name Mecca does not appear in any literature prior to the year 740 AD. That's 120 years after the founding of Islam. How can modern Mecca be the destination of pilgrimage and be considered a major city when it was not even on any maps until 2 centuries after Muhammad was born? The Quran also speaks of hills, mountains, or valleys, which do not fit the landscape of modern Mecca, but are all present in Petra. While I understand that this material may be considered controversial, you're invited to research this for yourself, not only in regards to the direction that the original mosques faced, but how many of them also now display red hair that was clipped from Muhammad's beard, which he allegedly started dyeing with red henna in his later years to match the color of his youth, which is why many Muslims today, who are not natural gingers like Muhammad was, also dye their hair red with henna to imitate their prophet. I included a link in the description for more on the appearance of Muhammad for those that are interested. The region of Edom included another group known in the Bible as Amalekites, another Edomite clan that, like the Kenites, had camped near the Israelites by the Jordan, but were considered their enemy for attacking them during the Exodus. In the Bible, Amalekites are said to have descended from a common ancestor named Amalek, a grandson of Esau, and in some rabbinical interpretations, the etymology of Amalek is from a term that means a people who lick blood. While some scholars claim that they were allegedly slaughtered by the Israelites, there are reports that at least some of their women were converted or escaped, as some descendants remain until today as part of a secret sect that still carries on their traditions covertly. In this brief clip, Jay Parker claims to be a living descendant from this ancient Canaanite sect.
The Illuminati, to my knowledge, goes back to Babylon and even before then to the previous age on Earth, the age of Atlantis. In fact, my father and his occult friends would refer to themselves as Atlantean warlocks. My mother can trace her satanic heritage back 3,000 years, mother to daughter witchcraft, to the Amalekite people of the Middle East. The Amalek are spoken of in the Old Testament. King Saul was ordered by Jehovah to kill all the Amalek. But a story I was told when I was a child was that when the Jews and King Saul were slaughtering the Amalekite, basically what they did was they disobeyed God. They decided instead of killing all the people and all the cattle and sheep, they decided to herd the cattle and sheep and use them for sacrifice to Jehovah. This was not the orders that were given by Jehovah. And so my mother's story to me when I was a child learning true history about Atlantis and about the dark occult was when the Amalekite herds were being rounded up by the Jews in the valley of the Amalek, a caravan of Amalek coming from Egypt into the valley saw the slaughter and slipped away to Moab, which is modern-day Jordan. And that's why you'll find, even though supposedly Saul killed all the Amalekite, 300 years later in the Old Testament, you're finding that the Jews are fighting the Amalek once again in Jordan.
Right.
Or Moab, as it is called.
This brings us to the identity of the population known as Jews, a modern term, as there is no letter J in the alphabet until the year 1524. Before that, the letter J was originally the same as the letter I. And so it's from the Hebrew word Yehudi and the ancient Greek Aedias, who were Hellenized Edomites, where we get the translation to Jew or Judean, where the term Jew implies religious beliefs of a people, and Judeans emphasizes their geographical origins. So where did Judaism as a racial identity come from? And why is Jewish ancestry traced from maternal lineage, when much of the Bible traces the offspring of Noah to Abraham as paternal? This page from Chabad.org website, which identifies as an Orthodox branch of Judaism, says, quote, "The code of Jewish law clearly states that a child of a Jewish mother is Jewish, regardless of the father's lineage or whatever else may show up in a DNA test, while the child of a non-Jewish mother is not Jewish." The reason for this is explained in the 1925 Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 5, page 40 and 41. Quote, "According to the Bible, immediately after Isaac's death, Esau settled Mount Seir, where he had lived before. The Edomites soon became powerful enough to extirpate the Horites, the former inhabitants of the country, whose ways of life they adopted. As among the Horites, each tribe was ruled by a prince or chief, whose position resembled probably that of an Arab sheik. Later, the Edomites organized themselves into a kingdom and had 8 kings when the first king in Israel began his reign. However, a list of chiefs given after that of the kings shows that subordinate chiefs ruled under the sovereignty of the king. In the time of Moses, both chiefs and king are mentioned. When the king of Edom refused to allow the children of Israel to pass through his land on their way to the land of Canaan, the Israelites were expressly ordered not to wage war upon the Edomites, but to go around their country. Neither did the king of Edom attempt hostilities against the Israelites, though he prepared to resist the aggression. Nothing further is heard of the Edomites until their defeat by Saul 400 years later. 40 years later, David overthrew the Edomites in the Valley of Salt, and his general Joab slew all their males. From that time, Edom remained subject to Israel. After the conquest of Judah by the Babylonians, the Edomites were allowed to settle in southern Palestine. At the same time, they were driven by the Nabataeans from Edomia. In southern Palestine, they prospered for more than 4 centuries. Judas Maccabeus conquered their territory for a time. They were again subdued by John Hyrcanus, by whom they were forced to observe Jewish rites and laws. They were then incorporated with the Jewish nation, and their country was called by the Greeks and Romans Idumea, ruled over by Judea until its conquest by the Romans. King Herod's ancestors were Edomites by descent that had converted to Judaism. He married into Jewish royalty and was proclaimed King of the Jews by Rome during the time when Jesus was born. When renovating the temple, King Herod employed 1,000 priests as masons in the rebuilding, which was destroyed in 70 AD. It is from temple mason priests that Freemasons get their name, and from the bloodline of 24 high temple priests, 12 men and 12 women, where the Knights Templar claim lineage, as their descendants allegedly migrated into Europe, becoming nobility and marrying into royalty. Whether this esoteric Templar myth is symbolic or literal is up for debate, but speaks to the lost tribe legends. This includes Germanic tribes such as the Saxons, Franks and Goths, the Celtic people, such as Bretons, Gauls, and Iberians, and other populations associated with the Scythians, such as those in Ireland, where Scottish Rite Freemasonry was started as an extension of the Kabbalistic Templars and Rosicrucians. Freemasonry is founded on the belief that the teachings of the Aryan Magi were adopted by King Solomon, who then employed them in the construction of his famous temple. Much of these Gnostic-like teachings comprised the Kabbalah, which the temple priests and later Knights Templar brought back into Europe, becoming the foundation of esoteric alchemy, hermeticism, and what is known generically as the occult. While these secret teachings are associated with the Grail mysteries, the legend of the Holy Grail is also symbolic of a certain bloodline.
Rixdeus are a bloodline that trace their origins back to the 24 high priests of the Temple of Jerusalem, which includes the family of Jesus. And according to Holy Mother the Church, and who are we to doubt their word, Jesus was single and had no children. But in actual fact, like all Jews of his time, he was obliged by Jewish custom and tradition to marry and procreate. He was doubly empowered to do this because he was also a rabbi and the heir to the throne of the line of David. So he had to produce an heir. And one of the most closely guarded secrets in European history is the fact that he founded a bloodline known as the Desposini, which are still extant in Europe today. When I go to England, I stay with one member of it. And when I go to Nice, I have breakfast with another. And descendants of Jesus are all around you. Many of the people who are true descendants of Jesus of Nazareth don't even know it. Well, I've just used a term which is inaccurate, Jesus of Nazareth. The problem is that Nazareth didn't exist at the time of Jesus. He was Jesus the Nazarene. He was a member of an esoteric cult attached to the Essene order, an initiatory form of spirituality which is still being practiced in secret today. And the Rex Deus families outwardly practice the religion of their place and time, but secretly amongst themselves follow their own path. And shortly after I published Rex Deus, I had a letter on very impressive notepaper with a coat of arms at the top, and it was a very brief and terse letter. It said, "Dear authors, you should really have consulted me before you rushed so precipitately into print. We must talk, or better yet, meet." And it was signed with a well-known Scottish family name. So I rang this gentleman and I said, "Well, Professor," I said, "we filled in a lot of gaps in the story with our knowledge of medieval history. Where did you go wrong?" He said, "You didn't, dear boy. It's just incomplete. Do you want the rest?" The result was a book called Custodians of Truth. And between the two of them, they traced the influence of these families on the development of European culture. And that influence was quite profound, particularly in spiritual matters. They were the families responsible for the founding of the Military Order of the Knights Templar. And after that was suppressed, several centuries later, they played a seminal role in the foundation of the Worldwide Fraternity of Freemasonry, which is still running and still extant today. So their influence is all-pervasive. They were still practicing a form of initiatory Judaism which traced its roots back long before the time of Jesus, and its original origins come from Egypt. That story deserves to be told. It became the basis for the best-selling novel by Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code. It was the only true thing in it, because most of his symbolism in it is a load of horseshit. Excuse the expression, but that's what it was. And it's a story which is riveting, because these people acquired power in Europe very, very early on at the time of Charlemagne and are still in positions of power today. And there is a chivalric order which is still running called the Order of the Fleur-de-Lis. Membership is by invitation, but to hold office within that order you have to be a member of one of the families of the Rex Deus group. And they cover some very, very powerful people. What their agenda is today, I haven't the faintest idea. But they're still about, and they're still exerting massive influence behind the scenes, all very quietly. And I, for one, would love to know what their agenda is.
May the Spirit of the Lord, who anointed Jesus at his baptism, so anoint you this day, that you might exercise authority with wisdom and direct your counsels with grace.
The sacred anointing is done. Presentation of regalia complete. the moment of crowning has arrived.
According to Burke's Peerage, a British authority on royal pedigrees, and verified by Ali Goma, the former Grand Mufti of Egypt, the late Queen Elizabeth, and now the newly crowned King Charles can trace their bloodline through the Earl of Cambridge in the 14th century across medieval Muslim Spain, 43 generations back to Fatima, the daughter of the Prophet Muhammad, founder of Islam. That said, the British monarchy, like many other royal families, claim ancestral heritage from Jerusalem, in particular the House of David. According to the Bible, this dynastic succession would culminate in the Messiah, a great king of this lineage who would reign on the throne of Israel and establish his rule over all nations. It is in this context that the events of World War I, such as the Balfour Declaration given to Lord Rothschild, should be considered. Rothschild, incidentally, means red shield, and the lens through which global geopolitical actions of nations that maintain a high degree of Masonic leadership, such as the United States and Great Britain, should be viewed.
God save the king!
God save the king!
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.